to bind, the act of fastening, securing, untying, or the like, to torture, the action or practice of inflicting severe pain or suffering on someone for punishment, to kill, the act to cause death. A story I will share with you this Tuesday. A normal, all-American life, they said. Who would have known this guy was capable of this? But he had a wife and kids. Just goes to show ya, you can never judge a book by its cover. Or a neighbor down the street. Gosh, sometimes you just really never know who somebody really is. This is the case of the BTK killer. Tuesdays with Trisha, Season 2, Episode 5. That's right. It's CBD Store. Located on 31801 Mission Trail in Lake Elsinore, California, this is Inland Empire's only premium CBD store. You guys, seriously, they have CBD-infused water, oils, tinctures, gummies, roll-ons, bath bombs, scrubs, lotions, so much more. You have to go check it out for your one-stop CBD shop. It's CBD Store in Lake Elsinore, California.
Welcome to Wichita and Park City, Kansas for this week's episode. If you are a first-time listener, welcome to the coolest place on earth. And if you are a repeat basic bitch, my heart is with you and welcome back. Well, since I've never been to Kansas, this would be the perfect time to introduce my guests for this week's episode. From the amazing hair-raising horror podcast, you've heard them before on the show, please welcome my two favorite creepy pals, Zelina and April. Welcome, ladies.
Hi.
Hey, thanks for having us.
So happy to have you. So since I've never been to Kansas, why don't each one of you talk about Kansas, describe something so our listeners can kind of place it on the map?
Well, I mean, Kansas City was where we live, and it's, you know, it's a really nice town. It's a big city, but you get a small town feel. You know, you can always run into somebody that you know, like anywhere you go, even like the outside suburbs. And sometimes, you know, you meet someone new and they know someone that you know. So, like I said, it's a big city with a small town feel.
Yeah. Awesome. Regardless of like what people think after watching The Wizard of Oz, I mean, we do have indoor plumbing. We're not just wheat plains and yellow brick roads and little people. So we do have tornado season, though.
Oh, yeah. What's up with the tornado season? So
it's actually right now going on during this time. It started what? Last week, April?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it happens. You're used to it. It's like, okay, you know, you wait till that siren goes off and then you go downstairs in the basement.
I was about to say, so each one of you guys got basements, yeah?
Yeah. All the houses here usually have basements.
Yeah.
I just want all of my listeners to just, those ladies have basements, okay? Hey. I'm just kidding. You know, we're just going to be talking about some serial killers today, so
right, you know, exactly.
Put all these red flags up here. Red flag, basement. Basement.
Speaking of, my basement has windows, so
yeah, mine has little ones, not big ones, but I do have friends who bought a home that had a basement with this room in it in the back of the basement, and the room had shag carpet squares, like just the squares, not full rolls, and all different colors mismatched, literally stapled to the walls, the ceiling, and the floor. And then it had a double-sided mirror I'm like, this was a killer's den right here.
Oh my God, that totally is. What did your friends actually do with that? Did they keep it like that,
Yeah,
or
they've
did
kept it like that. They don't, I was like, I don't, they were like, we're kind of afraid to pull it up if, for what we'll find, you know, like what's underneath the
Oh
cement.
my God. Don't put a black light on there.
Oh, I know.
Serious. Oh my God, that'd be
Yeah,
so,
it's pretty
I don't
creepy.
know. Yeah, that's way creepy. Wonder if you could ever take a picture of that sometime.
I could. I'll totally send it to you. She'll
Yeah.
send it.
Yeah, totally, dude. That would be awesome. I'll throw it up on the site so everybody can see the creepy basement.
Definitely.
Well, we will start our story today. So our story today begins on March 9th, actually 1945. We'll take you back to this is when Dennis Lynn Rader was born. He was born in Pittsburgh, Kansas, to Dorothea May and William Elvin Rader. Dennis was one of four boys. His other brothers were Paul, Jeff, and Bill. It is said the family eventually moved to Wichita, Kansas, where both parents were said to have worked a lot and like really long hours, so frequently leaving the children alone and unattended. This seems to affect Dennis growing up as he started to harbor resentment towards his mother and father for neglect. So I think out of the four boys, he took it the hardest. And while everyone was growing up and living their lives, Dennis was in another corner of his own. So it is said at a young age that Dennis Rader was into sadistic torture fantasies, often daydreaming and torturing trapped and helpless women. But even more so, as a young boy, he exhibited zoosadism, which is torturing, killing, and hanging small animals. I don't know about you guys, but this is like a classic red flag for the serial killer world.
Oh yeah,
Yeah.
anytime I see a little kid like kick a dog or you know be mean to, I'm like, oop, that kid's gonna kill someday.
It
I do every time.
is. I mean, I look at it too. You know, it starts at that age with like little like stuff. I remember I had this neighbor and she had a young boy, and this young boy just would like go and like burn bugs. He would like find a bug and he would grab his mom's lighter and he would just burn it. And I'm like, what is wrong with you? Like, why are you burning the bugs? He's like, I just want to see how fast they melt. I'm like,
Oh.
I remember just thinking it was really weird. You know, it's one of those things like, what do you say to a parent, you know, when you see something like that happen? Excuse me, I think you need to have an psych eval done on your child.
It's like, oh.
I mean that in the nicest way possible.
I'm like, look, save your money because you're going to need it for lawyers when that kid gets older. See, you're
Oh,
nicer than I would be about it, Trish. You know me,
yeah.
I have Tourette's, you know, so I just blurt it all out.
I just blurted out, your child's a serial killer.
Yeah. I'm like, that kid looks like it has the devil in him.
Your child has crazy eyes, you
I
I'd be that parent just laughing my ass off in the corner, just being like, she said it
had a friend one time, I was joking. So I'm an ordained minister, you know? And so I had a friend one time and their kid was acting up and I was like, you know, I think I could lay hands on him if you need me to. Thought it was funny, luckily, but I wasn't joking. But you know,
God, that's so funny. I'm glad they thought it was funny. They were probably like, yeah, you do it better you than us. All right.
yeah.
So eventually Dennis did graduate high school. He attended Kansas Wesleyan University. Did I say that right? I don't know if I said that right. Okay. But dropped out after only 1 year. Surprise, surprise. He then joined the Air Force between 1966 to 1970. And after that, he moved to Park City, where he actually got a job as a grocery as a, in the grocery store in the meat department. Said around this time he met his wife, Paula Dietz, and on May 22nd, 1971, they married. And they actually had two children together, Carrie and Brian. And after that, it looks like Dennis decided to go back to school. He got his associate's degree at a junior college before he ended up actually attending Wichita State University and getting a bachelor's degree in administration of justice, which I still don't know what the fuck that is, but okay.
Yeah, I'm thinking it was kind of like not really law, but kind of more of a police type.
I was like, is this a fancy word for a security guard?
Yeah, that's what,
Okay.
yeah, I think it is. I think it's more like, those types of duties. He was trying to figure out how to get around his
Right.
habits.
Okay. So it says that he had a job for a while as an assembler at the Coleman Company and then eventually got a job working for, get this, ADT Security. So he installed camera and security systems into people's homes.
I read something that stated that during this time, when they were publishing things about the BTK killer, that ADT had an influx in sales because
Yes.
people were worried about it. But yet it's like the killer's installing everything. So it's like, oh geez, he knows how to get around
Right. Right. No, I know this was a crazy thing. I actually just said that, but I was gonna say, like, side note, like this was all during the time of when he was actually actively killing. So here they are. Yeah, they had a, you're totally right. They had a jump in sales, and he was one of the people installing this. So could you imagine, like, I don't know, for him, that was probably like a little smirk he did every single time he installed one of those. He was like, like, I don't
I
know.
know, because like I don't even think back then they would turn around when you were setting your passwords and stuff like that. I mean, who's to say that just didn't make it so much that much easier for him,
Well, he probably set their passwords for them.
Exactly. So it's like, I wonder if he kept like ever like a file of any of thing, or if he jotted a couple of them down because he did pick his victims. So yeah. So it looks like he did dabble in the field communications work. And then this is weird too. He became a dog catcher and a compliance officer. And so this was all around like 1991. I'm going to talk about this compliance officer thing here in a second, but Dennis was known around the town as like a family man. Okay. So he was very church involved. He actually worked at the Christ Lutheran Church, and he even became a Cub Scout member, meaning that like he was like the guy that would take these kids out on these retreats. He was well respected and pretty much considered to have like your all-American life. So to go back to the compliance officer, one thing I kept reading about was the one thing that people did complain about Dennis was his job. They actually said when he was a compliance officer and a dog catcher, he was like really rude to people and he would enforce unnecessary rules. And one neighbor even claimed that Dennis maliciously killed her dog, but she basically couldn't like prove it. So yeah, so it was weird. So he already had like this kind of like streak going, but everyone was kind of like, probably he's just like the weird dude in the neighborhood. But his family was so a part of the community, and his family and him were so well liked that never really raised any flags for anybody, I think.
Well, but
So.
that's the thing, like with serial killers is they appear normal to people. I mean, what's someone being an asshole? Like there's lots of people who are rude, doing their jobs or whatever, but you would never suspect someone to be a serial killer, So
Right, yeah, it wouldn't like dawn on your it wouldn't dawn on you to be like, oh, okay, yeah, so this guy is definitely killing people behind everybody's back. Now I think about it, now I'm gonna be like looking at everybody.
doing this job, you think everybody's a suspect, seriously. Like I'm like, You have crazy eyes. You need an exorcism. I mean, it's like,
Serious.
Well, with him too, going back to like his earlier days before he did that, and going into his older age, he used to steal women's undergarments that were dirty and
Yep.
wear them around, and that would sexually arouse him and get him all hyped up to like kill someone. I'm like,
Yeah.
ooh,
Oh.
that's nasty.
Oh, and it makes me think about all those OnlyFans pages or the people, the girls that send out the stuff, where they wear the underwear for a week and then they send it out to whoever. I'm just like, man, who are these people, that are purchasing this? Do we need to keep track of all these?
I was actually watching, and they were talking about one of the biggest sellers is your old dirty tennis shoes. I was like, I've got like five pair in my closet right now. I'm about to become a Toho man. I'd send that shit out. Like,
it's so true, dude. I got my daughter, you know, she's got some nasty rank shoes going on. Like, I'll send that shit out.
Pay me. You're gonna be making bank off that.
Oh god.
People have some weird ass fetishes, let me tell you.
They do. Side note, I won't name him for purposes, but one of my boyfriends in the past definitely took a pair of my underwear and like kept it, and I like found it one time in the drawer and I was kind of like, what is? And he's like, yeah, I'm weird. And I was like, yeah, okay, just as long as you don't kill me.
You had to sleep with one eye open. Oh god.
It took me a little bit to get used to it, but eventually I was like, okay, I think this guy's in the clear. I think we're good.
Oh my god, that's crazy.
So now I want to talk with you guys about the murders. So we're going to start on January 15th, 1974. It's actually three older teens were walking home from school in Wichita, Kansas. When they arrived home after school, they found their entire family murdered. 38-year-old Joseph Oterio, his wife, 33-year-old Julie Oterio, and their two young children, 11-year-old Josephine Oterio and 9-year-old Joseph Oterio Jr. They all died from either strangulation or suffocation. And unfortunately, no one had any idea like who would want to harm this family. So this case quickly went cold because police really just had no leads to go off of. It's actually a really sad one to read because it just went cold so quickly because everyone was just so kind of like up in arms about it.
They just didn't have the technology back then to keep things open the way they do nowadays. Right. Now, right. I mean, I bet you if they hadn't kept caught him, they could go back and get something off of the, you know, DNA or something.
Definitely. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later because you're definitely hitting it right on the head. So 4 months later, on April 4th, 1974, the body of Catherine Doreen Bright was found. She had been stabbed multiple times in the abdomen with a knife, and then she actually later died at Wesley Medical Center. This case, too, quickly went cold. 3 years later, on March 17th, 1977, the body of 24-year-old Shirley Ruth Vianne Relford was found strangled by a rope and found dead. Again, in the 70s, this case went cold. And then again, on December 8th, 1977, the body of Nancy Jo Fox was found strangled as well, but this time the killer had actually switched up his MO and used a belt. The case went cold, but police at this point were confident to know that they had obviously like a serial killer on their hands. And even with more killings piling up and more victims and more evidence, all these cases have gone cold. Now, in 1978, no, go ahead, Selena. Where are you going
to
say?
I was just going to say, that's so awful. It's, you know, to think that there was no justice for them at that point in time.
Absolutely. And how frustrating for the investigators, too, to have to deal with cold case after cold case after cold case, but knowing that somewhat these cases are connecting. So, yeah, it was definitely a needle in a haystack type of, I think, investigation for them.
Well, and it's like the Night Stalker, you know, like, you know, it's happening or it's going to happen again, but you just don't know, you know, who you're looking for.
Right. Yeah. Or when it's going to happen again too.
Yeah. Cause there was no rhyme or reason.
Right. So in 1978, a local news station, KAKE in Wichita, received a letter. Before we go on for this, is KAKE still in Wichita, Kansas? Do you guys know? Or
I have no idea. I've never heard of it. Have you, April?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Wichita, so Wichita probably is a little bit away from us, so.
Oh, okay. So, but yeah, I wonder if the news station is probably, but it's in the 70s, so. Oh, actually, you know what? We're going to talk about this news station later because I think they do pop up in the 2000s. So in this letter, it described in gruesome detail the murders of the Oterio family, the Bright murder, the Relford murder, and the Fox murder. It also included a poem that was titled "Oh, Death to Nancy," referring to Nancy Fox, and it suggested that he killed using Factor X, which was something that basically told him or inspired him to like kill. So this would go along the lines of other serial killers, such as like Jack the Ripper, Son of Sam, and the Hillside Strangler, because all of them have claimed they had like a Factor X, except for Jack the Ripper, because nobody fucking talked to that guy. So I don't really know where that one came up, but I would think that they I know that I read something that they think like Jack the Ripper kind of had like that whole mindset of something like talking to him, you know, kind of like David Berkowitz, how he said the dog would bark to him and he's the one that talks. So the Factor X is what they call. The killer had like many names suggested for himself in this letter. So one of the names that actually stuck with was BTK, which actually stood for bind, torture, and kill. So now the police definitely knew that these murders were connected, but they still didn't know to who. And they did know the killer definitely wanted recognition for his work, and he was obviously going to go to certain lengths to get it, you know, sending the letter with all these suggestions in there. My goodness.
That's just like a man. Wanting to get recognition for some shit.
I did the dishes. Right. What do you want, a medal?
Right? Yeah, I did the dishes all fucking week. You did them for one day. Woo-hoo!
Exactly. I flushed the toilet.
But we love our male listeners. We're not man haters.
I didn't pee on the toilet, you know. I didn't pee on the seat. I put the seat down for you.
So even though, like, surprisingly, with all this, you know, in him sending this letter to the station, actually things go quiet for quite some time. And it's actually 10 years to be exact. And then that's when on April 27th, 1985, the body of Maureen Wallace Hedge was found. She had been strangled to death. And this time actually police suspected that she was strangled by hand, but unfortunately no DNA evidence to go on. So too, this case went cold. And then a little more than a year later, on September 16th, 1986, the body of 28-year-old Vicki Lynn Wedgerly was found strangled by nylon stockings. This case, too, went cold. And then 5 years later, on January 19th, 1991, the body of 62-year-old Dolores Davis was found. She had been strangled by pantyhose as well. But again, this case went cold. Cold, like there was still nothing, you know, and it went quiet at this point. So everyone was kind of wondering, did the killer die? Did he go into hiding? And unfortunately, like the police and the public were just kind of left to fucking wonder about this one. So, you know, it was surprising me too with the DNA, you know, like they started talking about the DNA evidence on the 85 case, because I think that's when it started to really come into play.
Yeah, you know, what I was sitting here thinking though when you were telling that is that are these pantyhose dirty? Like, were they worn? Because we talked about all the other stuff before, and that's all I heard. Like,
oh my God. Well, at this point, you know what? It wouldn't matter if he got dirty ones or clean ones because he was probably smart and used cash and nobody, like, you know, so.
Right. I'm just like,
what if they ever, like, looked into that on how many pantyhose he actually purchased?
And don't you find, I mean, I understand.
Oh, that's what I was going to say. They were pantyhose that he had purchased, not the victim's pantyhose.
Well, no, see, that's what I was wondering too. I was wondering if they were the victim's pantyhose but each of them were nylon stockings. And I would assume that they're the victims because of like the time period. Everybody still wore like stockings and all that. So it would be common for women, and it would be common for him if he was going to bind them and torture them. And then he'd probably just kill them with their whatever they were wearing
Right.
So. It's interesting to wonder if, like, you know, I'm sure there's details on that. I should have looked at that.
Well, I looked and I couldn't find Vito on that when, because I it did talk about like his different things that he liked to steal. He just it just says dirty undergarments, so that's probably included in that if you think about it, because they were considered undergarments back then.
All right, yeah. So I would definitely assume then it's probably he's just taking the undergarments off the women and then using that to as his device. So this now brings us all to March 2004. So this is almost 15 fucking years later. I just need to fucking point this out, okay? And this is going to go on the whole Mansky's like, oh, I haven't still gotten recognition. No. The Wichita Eagle receives a letter. And in this letter, on the envelope, it has a return address of someone using the name of Bill Thomas Kilman. Now, in this letter, it describes in detail the murder of Vicki Wedgerly. And also enclosed in that letter happened to be photocopies of pictures from the crime scene and a copy of her driver's license that had actually been missing from the crime scene at the time of the murder. So the killer was fucking back. And this time, so much more than before. Okay. Like, clearly he wanted his glory. So the police were actually able to obtain a DNA sample under Vicky's fingernails.
See, that's what I always say. I'm like, if you ever get into a you know, fight with somebody, you scratch them. That way they know who killed you if you end up dead.
Exactly. Exactly.
Scratch, bite, whatever.
But remember, even putting DNA into a database still can't guarantee that you're actually going to have a match, because technically people need to be in the system. And unfortunately, with this, that's exactly what happened. They came up with nothing. And it said at one point that the police had a list of over 1,300 people on their suspects. That's a fuck ton of people that you have to interview and go through and do all that. So I'm sure at this point they're searching, but they also are probably waiting for the shark to bite again, because you know his ass is going to come on up and going to go for another one. So a few months later, the local news station, KAKE, that we previously talked about, actually receives a letter again from BTK. And this time it was titled BTK The Story. And it had fake IDs and word puzzles attached to it, apparently. So he's now taunting. And about a month later, on June 9th, a package was actually found taped to a stop sign. And in the package, it had descriptions of the Otero murders and a sketch that was labeled "The Sexual Thrill Is My Bill." It also had a proposed chapter list for the possible BTK book.
Oh, he's prepping.
He is. And the first chapter was titled "A Serial Killer Is Born." Like, a star is born, you know?
Oh, my God. He was getting his book deal ready, his movie deal ready.
And it looks like he got a little pissed off, because he went to go mimic, like, a story that was actually published at sometime that year on Court TV and had talked about the past murders. But he kind of, like, mocked it in this, like, whatever letter that he sent. So you can tell that he was getting, like, pissed off, because they knew that they had a killer out there. They just didn't know who. And he was probably like, I can't believe no one's finding me yet. I just imagine him, like, sitting there, you know, like, I don't know. And so he goes to taunt on some more, because in July of the same year, they found another package that was dropped at a public library return book slot. And bizarre items were found in there. And then he also claimed that he killed, like, this other boy by the name of Jake Allen. And so when investigators went to go, like, investigate it, they actually saw that Jake committed suicide. So they ended up ruling that out. I think he was just trying to take like a responsibility for a murder that didn't actually
Or maybe
happen.
He was trying to throw them himself. Off.
Yes, that is another good thought too. I thought the same thing. Maybe he's just trying to throw them off, send them in another direction, because at this point his MO is women and strangling and torturing, you know. So In October of 2004, a manila envelope was found in the UPS, and it actually contained graphic images of children and a poem that was threatening the life of the lead investigator at the time of the BTK case, and a false autobiography. So all of it, I guess, is released later to the public that you can actually go on and read. I know there's they have pictures and stuff up of all the stuff that he did end up sending. And then in December, investigators actually found another package that contained Nancy Fox's driver's license, and it actually had a doll in there, and the doll was bound by the hands and feet and had like a plastic bag over
That's
its
messed
head.
up.
So again, just it is. It's just giving more, more kind of like taunting of ha ha ha, see? So I don't know if during this time he was actively killing or he was just at this point older and couldn't. So he is just kind
His fantasies were driven by, the thrill of maybe possibly being caught instead of him actually performing, since he was probably older, not as strong, maybe. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I would think because these murders started in 74 and at this
Right.
point it's 2005. So in January of 2005, a package was attempted to be dropped off in a pickup truck, actually at it parked in the Home Depot parking lot. The box was actually later recovered, but what the most important thing about this is when investigators finally put it all together was the fucking surveillance tapes. Thank you. Welcome to the 2000s. They were actually able to see in the HD video footage that a black figure approached the back of the truck, dropped the package, and then that person got into a black Jeep Cherokee and drove away. So obviously I would assume that they didn't get like a license plate, or they couldn't really get, all they knew was that it was a black Jeep Cherokee.
It was their first lead, wasn't it? Like,
Yeah,
really?
it was one of their first leads that they got because they were actually able to see the surveillance tapes. And then in February, so a month later, 2005, the killer sends yet another package to KAKE, and this time it was another doll. Investigators believe it was to symbolize the death of 11-year-old Josephine Ontario. The killer was getting ballsy and each time giving a clue, which only led investigators one step closer. So I part of me thinks like this guy wanted to get caught. Like he was just like, like, 'cause I mean, 15 years later, I either that or it was bothering him so bad, that he just needed to get it out. I know that a lot of that happens to a lot of killers over the
Well,
time, where they just
obviously
kind of
he was
need
not
to.
using his degree because, law enforcement, has come a long way since the 70s.
You mean his administration and
Yeah.
justice
Well,
degree?
I actually looked it up, and it says that administration of justice is a specialization within criminal justice that studies and applies the law in criminal justice systems. You can get a degree in this, and you actually can get a job being in law enforcement, and study areas such as forensics.
Oh my God,
So, like I said,
what an idiot.
obviously, Wichita State didn't do him very good.
Hey, just so
No.
you know, our dad graduated from Wichita State.
Oh,
Oh,
that's funny. So, okay, speaking of funny, because this is where things get funny for me in this investigation. Like funny as in like ha ha to the fucking killer, okay? You can't get much more stupid than this, okay? I think when people get away with certain things for so long that they eventually end up letting their guard down. And this is the classic sign of where people start making mistakes. And the first mistake this guy made was he asked it, so he was communicating with investigators through personal ads in the Wichita Eagle. That's kind of like how they were able to see that they had somebody that was communicating with them. So his first question to the investigators was, "Excuse me, if I sent you guys a floppy disk of like information, could you
Oh
trace
God.
this?" literally asked them that question, and it's just like, for me, that's like the
Oh
stupidest
my
thing. Like,
God.
what do you think investigators are going to say? Oh yeah, we'll totally be able to find you know, send it on over. Like,
Again, not
no,
using
no,
his degree.
investigators will.
Well, that's
Exactly,
like
or
those
his
people that
fucking
send
brain.
letters and they use gloves and everything, but then
They
they
lick
lick
the
it.
yeah.
It's like, hello.
Yeah. Hello. So I just thought it was super funny. So obviously investigators reach back out to the personal ads and they say, no, nothing can be traced. Send it on over. But I mean, it's like 2005 at this point. Like, this guy's an idiot. But
That's like
anyways.
when you got weed on you and you're like to somebody, you're like, you have to tell me if you're a cop. Are you a cop? They don't have to tell you shit. Like,
Exactly. Yeah, they don't have to tell you. It's not gonna, I mean, that's not
hey,
considered entrapment at that point. Like,
not that I have weed on me, just so we make that clear.
hey,
But
well, at least you didn't use the prostitution, like, you know, the
right.
prostitution example.
Oh my gosh. So obviously they respond back and investigators just decide to wait at this point. They're like, all right, let's see if this guy actually bites. Well, sure enough, on February 16th, 2005, this motherfucker sends a 1.44 megabyte memory floppy disk to the Fox TV, an affiliate of the TV station, and enclosed a letter with it, a gold medallion, and a photocopy of the cover of a book, which was called Rules of Prey. Now, this book was actually about a 1989 serial killer. So when investigators put in the floppy disk, they were actually, you know, because you can search on all of those. So they were able to find Christ Lutheran Church. And at the very bottom of the document, it had an update on it that said it was last modified by Dennis. So boom, they had a name. So, and obviously, a quick internet search later, we're able to narrow down the fact that actually a Dennis Rader worked at Christ Lutheran Church.
Always
So
the extra religious one, huh?
boom.
Hey, you know
Oh
that
yeah,
floppy
I
disk? I
know.
think that was the same size that I played Oregon Trail on back in the day. Do you guys
Yeah.
remember that
Because
game?
I actually love that game. I actually downloaded it to my iPhone a few years ago because you can actually play it. It's
Yeah, I didn't
awesome.
have it on my iPhone. I actually did a floppy disk, so.
Me too. When I played it like back in the day in school, I remember we had to go in and it was a floppy disk that you had to put in there and stuff. It's just pretty funny in 2005 you're still using a floppy disk as well.
Exactly.
This guy clearly had no idea what he was doing, but investigators did. And I'm really proud of the investigators on this because they actually didn't immediately jump and go and arrest Dennis Rader. They actually sent out a surveillance team to his house. And what would you know? Investigators pull up to the house and they see, oh, it's a black Jeep Cherokee that's parked in the driveway. Ding, ding. But then police even went a step further and obtained a warrant for a pap smear that was actually done on Dennis's daughter, Carrie. And the DNA swab showed that the killer was closely related to Carrie as they compared it to the DNA that they obtained from Vicky Wedgerly's fingernails.
Oh my
So
God.
boom,
I
baby.
didn't even know they could do that. They can, I mean, that's pretty
I know.
private on, you know, that's her
What
private.
happened to swabbing the like door handle?
Right. And you know what? I thought it was a little weird that they did this, but I'm thinking as an investigator, like I'm trying to put my mind into theirs. And what I'm thinking is they did that to not raise any red flags with this guy. They
Right, so
probably
he
didn't
wouldn't
want him
run.
to know a thing. So that's why they did the secondary thing like that. But what a smart thing to do as well. Like whoever was the investigator that thought to do that is just genius. Like it's just like, you know what, we're gonna get him another way. We're gonna kind of go right underneath his fucking nose and he's
What
not even
happened
gonna
to
know.
waiting for him to drink a coffee and throwing
So
it in the trash?
I know, right? Or like, or like going in, sneaking in. I like when the investigators like the ballsy investigators, the ones, that they always show in the movies where they like, they go to the back window, and it just so happens the back window of the kitchen is unlocked and they're able to get through real quick, and
Right.
they go steal some hair samples, and the killer's coming back in the house and
Yeah.
they're running down the stairs and boom, they make
And they're always prepared with their
it.
baggies
Always to
Yeah,
put all the
exactly. And that's
evidence
why I
in.
carry baggies in my
All
car.
the evidence in.
Shut up, dude.
Oh my God. But anyways, they knew at this point, investigators definitely knew they had their guy. So on February 25th, 2005, Dennis Lynn Rader was arrested. When the arresting officer asked Dennis if he knew why he was being taken into custody, Dennis replied, "Oh, I have my suspicions as to why." So he was then charged with 10 counts of first degree murder and labeled as the BTK killer. A police chief would later announce to the public that
I
BTK
actually
had been
remember
caught.
that they announced it all over the news. It was all over the news, yeah.
Yeah.
It was huge.
Do you remember?
I remember it too.
Do you guys remember there was actually an 11th victim that was on the way, but she ended up living.
Yeah, I
Do you guys
remember
remember
that.
this? Yeah,
No, I don't
he had
remember
picked
this.
her out already. He had been stalking her for months. And so when he went to kill her, a garbage guy man actually showed up. So that ended up saving her life, and he got captured like directly after that. Like, and it and
Oh,
so yeah, so
wow.
they didn't even know that she had been saved. She didn't know, she didn't know he'd been stalking her
But
and doing all
they
this.
found like notes
Yeah, so
and
she
stuff. Yeah, of course. With her name. And all that, like preparing for it with her name. God, could you imagine that? Could you imagine like an investigator coming up to your door and being like, "Hey, we got something we need to talk
Oh my
about."
God, that would be freaky, wouldn't it? You'd never sleep well in that home
Yeah.
again. It's like,
No, not at all. Just to know that you were like a victim of somebody. I always think that though too. Every time like I go out or something, when somebody stares at me too long, I'm like, "What you looking at, fool?" Like, stop staring at me.
It does. You never know. You just never know. The people are creepy.
Yeah, it's very, very creepy. So this is also funny. He originally stated that he was not guilty. But looks like he must have talked to some lawyers or something, because by the time the court proceedings actually came to take place, he changed his plea to guilty. So meaning he never went through trial or anything. He just ended up getting seen by a judge. And it said on the day of his sentencing, he did like this 30-minute monologue to the judge that could be described, as some people say, like an Academy Award performance, which is no surprise. I mean, look at the guy. He was sending letters, he had his book deal already ready. I mean, this guy was ready to be glorified. So his 15 minutes of fame, he fucking
He
took it
wanted that
and ran with
recognition.
it. So yeah, he definitely did. And it just, I guess the whole kind of proceeding just contained him rambling about things, but a lot of people said it exuded every type of like psychopath you could absolutely put your finger on. It was just, you're probably just watching him just perform, just being like,
And he was such a
here's my
troll. If you
glory.
see pictures of him, it's like it's always those ones that look so fucking creepy, And it's like,
I
oh.
know, I know. So one thing I didn't talk about was, I told you guys he was a Cub Scout member for a while. Well, I know a couple of his stories, like a couple, one story in particular, I'm not sure which victim it pertains to, but one of the days he was actually out on like a Cub Scout adventure. Okay. So it was a 3-day kind of like weekend thing. You take the boys out. So he took all these kids out, was with all these kids, doing all these like kind of like Cub Scout things and being a great person, da 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 da. He put these fucking kids, these boys, to bed and left in the night to go bind, torture, and kill. And his alibi for all of it was the fact that he was out on the retreat with the boys, and as far as everybody knows, Dennis never left the campsite. Dennis never did any of that. So it's kind of crazy to think that he had all these like normal things in life that were covering for him. That was his alibi, him being a Cub
And
Scout
that's the
leader.
thing is,
So
most of
while
these
he's
people that do this type of thing, these serial killers, are smart like that. They premeditate every, step, and that's how they last so long.
Yeah, it goes back to Bundy.
Yeah.
It goes back to even more recently that we talked about Chris Watts. Yep. You know, just that he what a fucking normal life that guy led, you know. And then all of a sudden, you know, he just snapped.
Yeah.
And you know, and he describes though later on that he says that he knew that day he was going to kill his wife. Like there was nothing. He woke up that morning knowing that that's what he was going to do. So I have a feeling that this is what happens with killers. They kind of get in that whole mindset and then there's nothing really that can
stop
them from that. You know, it was said that he was super unemotional when the victims' families had made their impact statements. You know, everybody gets to make their impact statement. He kind of just sat there very stoic. But he was sentenced to 10 consecutive life sentences with a minimum of 175 years to
serve. That kind of shit pisses me off. We just need the death penalty, you know?
Okay, so
go ahead.
Yeah, which yeah. I was going to say, but Kansas actually at this time did not have
the death penalty
in place at the time of his sentencing. So that's why he got the life in prison. It now is said that he actually serves his time in solitary confinement at El Dorado Correctional Facility. So they didn't even give this guy a chance to go into general pop, which they should have, because then he would be gone. But in what pissed me off too about that is I read that over the years now, he's obviously earned rec time. He's earned television. He's earned radio for fucking good behavior, you know, and
that drives me nuts. It's just like, you know what? They committed crimes, multiple crimes. They don't deserve to earn
multiple.
Yeah.
No, I know. It's like, I don't even understand why they're even given that. Like, but, you know, I heard death row, you know, is apparently one of the more plusher places to be, you know, so inmates will even almost fight to get on to death row because it's like, they already know they have life sentences.
Right.
Might as well get on to death row. You have your own room, you have television, you have rec time, you get all that, you know?
Have you guys ever seen that movie Death Race?
Yes.
You haven't, April? Oh my God. They take all these people on death row and stuff and make them race cars, and half of them end up dying, and that's how they weed out the population, and the ones that win get to come back and race again next week.
And then if you win the entire thing out after that, you get out of actual.
Yeah, race. You get your freedom.
Does it have Jason Statham?
It's like a future. It's like a future.
Yeah, the first one. Yes, it does. Woo-hoo.
That was just a pure guess. That was a pure guess. Because that seems like a movie he would be.
Oh my God, yes, he's in the first one. That's hilarious.
April knows how I like my bald
but
men.
You know what I think is like honestly, people on death row, like whatever they did, they should do to them. So like, since he like strangled people, I think they should strangle him to like almost the point of death, but not quite, and then let him come back to life and do that every day.
And then,
but he was a pervert.
But he didn't get off on strangling himself,
you know.
I mean, there's people who get off on strangling themselves.
Well, but you know, if he did something
to him, like, you know, pull his nails out or something, you know, something to cause him pain,
right? Like, isn't that like Chinese bamboo torture or something like that? Isn't that what that's called when you pull the nails out or put like the bamboo shoots under the nails?
Either that or the Chinese water torture, where they put,
like, waterboarding,
the water that keeps going or something. But I agree. I think it should be,
right.
I think it should be honestly an eye for an eye always. I think.
Oh yeah.
Apparently, you know, that goes against obviously our laws and on how to fairly treat people.
Fuck that. He lost his humanity when he killed somebody.
Why the death penalty, you know, is like, constantly
they
going.
Should just let the family in a room with all the families of the victims, just let them in a room with him and just, you know, turn their backs. That's it.
Let him at it
with like some baseball bats, or they could even do like prison soap in the socks where they just wind it up, start beating, you know, whatever.
I don't know. I think it should too, but unfortunately, you know, our justice system works a different way. And oddly, as we're sitting here in 2021, Dennis Rader is still alive in prison to this very fucking day. Over with you guys there in Kansas.
I swear.
So, you guys go ahead and keep that man over there.
Man.
And obviously, you know, our hearts go out to all the victims and families destroyed by this monster. I hope that this
Yeah.
guy never sees the light of day ever again.
Oh, yeah, I
So,
hope that for sure. That would be tragic if that ever happened.
definitely.
Yeah.
Well, it was
Yeah, thanks for
wonderful
having us.
having you guys on for the episode.
I know, thanks
So,
for inviting
yeah,
us.
and I love you guys always, and it's always a blast.
We love you
So we're gonna.
too. And for your listeners out there, if you guys get a chance, check out Hair Raising Horror, the podcast. On it comes out every Saturday.
Yep, and you can do it on all streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, CastBox,
iHeart,
any one of
everything,
those.
yeah.
Make sure you check out their social media pages as well, Hair Raising Horror, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, right? You guys are on
Yep.
Twitter?
We're under
All right.
HRH Stories.
HRH Stories. So make sure to check them out. They're super awesome. And of course, till next time, see you next week on Tuesdays with Cora. All right, ladies.
Good
Awesome.
job. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Thank you, guys. You guys were awesome. I love you.
Awesome.
And it'll be up on Tuesday for you.
Nice. And then, hey, if you want, send me the link, and then we'll put it on ours too. And we'll just say, hey, that way.
Perfect. Yep. I totally
Yeah.
will do it.
And then
Yep. And
I'll do
remind
it
me to
that.
do it
Yeah.
because
I'll
I know
just
I
do a
always.
like quick little intro introducing your podcast again and then play it or whatever. Yeah.
All righty. Awesome.
All
Sounds
right, girl. That was
good.
fun.
Love
Thank
you too.
you.
All right. Okay.
Love you
Bye,
too.
guys.
And remember, check out Tuesdays with Trisha on
And we
We
love
love
our
our five-star
five-star Apple
Apple
reviews.
reviews. Now, don't forget to listen to Tuesdays with Trisha. And also, make sure you wash your hands and keep your mask on, although it's 2021.
Yay!